Well, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, Kevin and Warren, just like the ones I used to know. I really like to sing, Warren, okay? It's Christmas time. I want to sing a Christmas carol where the treetops glisten.
Wasn't expecting that.
That was that's my Bing Crosby impression, you know, for you, right? You would remember Bing Crosby. Kevin, how are you doing, man? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Jimmy. Doing great, shoveling like crazy.
Time to get the snowblower out. What it is time for is another episode of Inside Curling. Here we go.
Last rock, eighth end, up by two.
Should be all there. I don't think I'm white.
I don't think you are either.
Oh,
it's clean.
Don't
kill it, Ben. Don't kill it.
Line's really good. Line's good. Right on the button, guys. Right here.
Last stone for Kevin Martin. They want it on the button. The sweepers are watching it. Fans are on their feet. Kevin Martin goes out as a champion. Cuts him to one. He will win his final Grand Slam, taking the Players' Championship. Talk about putting an exclamation mark at the end of a career. All he had to do was cut him down. Kevin Martin can celebrate. He is a champion.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to everybody. We really appreciate you listening to the show. Of course, this is Inside Curling, and we want to recognize all our sponsors. Sports Interaction, who brings what's happening. We've got several segments, right, that we do. Nestle Boost, the sponsor of the mailbag. Coyote Tractor, who brings you hot rock topics. And Storytime, sponsored by Meridian. And, of course, our guests are brought to you by Goldline Curling. I've got a special show for you. We're first going to do story time with Kevin. Warren, you're going to tell us what you think of what was the highlight event of the 2021 curling season. And then we've got our special guest coming up. With the Sportsnet curling commentary crew, it's going to be great. We got all three of them, Rob Falls, Joan McCusker, and Mike Harris are going to come on, talk about the Olympics, what their thoughts are, who the picks are. Of course, it's getting close if the Olympics can be pulled off. We love you emailing us. We use a lot of it, and your emails are fantastic. InsideCurling@gmail.com. Warren picks them. If you want to get picked, keep it short, okay? Don't write a novel. It's difficult on us. So, again, InsideCurling@gmail.com. This has been an exceptional year. There's been many points of view. I'd like to hear what each of our hosts have to say about curling in 2021, good or bad or otherwise, whatever it is. So, Kevin, let's start with you. If you had to sum up the year, what sticks out?
Well, what sticks out, you know, I was trying to think of one event, but it's not really one event. It was a whole bunch of events in the bubble that sticks out to me, like how it was possible to have those events take place. And over, I think the total amount of days was, for some people in the bubble, 93 days, I think, for the people that did the most. And for people to understand what it was like, you're in the hotel, basically in your room. The only place you could walk was in the parking lot, and then you'd go over to the venue, and that's it. That was it. So for me, I think I was there 41 or 42 days, but some people are 93 days. So in order to have that event go off with very little problem was huge. Probably more important, though, and this is my point, is having the World Curling Federation, Curling Canada, and Rogers Sportsnet, the Grand Slams, all work together in unison and pull this thing together as a group. That's unique in curling, and I think that bodes well for the future. There's a few things that I'd love to see happen, the World Cup being one of them, and we need those groups to be together to make this occur. And I think what happened in Calgary at the bubble is going to matter big time in the future of our game, with these guys getting along much better and working together and making things happen.
Do you think the national finals will come off, Kev? The Brier and the Scotties?
This year?
Yeah.
In 2022, Jimmy?
Yes.
I do, actually. Yeah. Now, we'll have to be in some sort of a bubble situation. It's really hard to say the way things are going, but we as a curling group, we know it works now. it can be done. It's possible, and it went pretty smooth. The players know that they can compete and excel and make the shots. Everybody realizes it's not easy, that's for sure. But lots of testing needs to be done. But yeah, Jim, I do. I think that last year had a lot to do with that, and making sure that people understand that it is possible to do these things, and and knowing it's not easy. But yeah.
This is story time. No story would be complete, Kevin, until we get Warren weighing in. It's brought to you by Meridian Manufacturing, your industrial and on-farm storage and handling partners, and of course a proud sponsor of the Grand Slam of Curling. Warrensy? What's your opinion when you look back at the, if you have an opinion, Warren, when you look when you look back at the last year in curling?
I think two or three things. I think for sure I agree with Kevin. The whole operation in that bubble in Calgary is a fantastic accomplishment. And for Curling Canada, who originally put the whole idea together, and then to bring together Sportsnet and the World Curling Federation in it as well, I think was phenomenal. And as Kevin suggested, I hope this is going to be a path to the future where we see these groups start to work more together, because I think that's one of the things we're lacking. Everyone is too independent and there isn't enough exchange of thought processes and how we do things. The other interesting thing from last year was the emergence of Bruce Mowat. This team is exceptional and they're going to be dominant in men's curling here for quite some time unless something strange happens. But their approach to life and how they look at things is just a little different from what we've seen in the past. And so I'm really looking forward to watching them and seeing what they do this coming year. I think the other interesting thing from last year is, for the first time, I believe, in history that I can remember, Canada failed to reach the medal podium of men's, women's, and mixed doubles. Maybe it was because of the whole bubble situation and the difficulty of last year that things just weren't as they normally would be. But then on the other side of the coin, if you take a look at all the teams from around the world that are just getting better and better, and Canada's got lots of good players, but do we need to approach things a little differently to ensure that we can maintain the kind of edge to take on people like Bruce Mowat? And that's sort of the highlights I see from last season.
I mean, this is exceptional, right, with COVID and playing in a bubble. Was there any that were ever canceled, Warren, for any reason, when you think over the years?
During my time, no. I believe the last time the Brier was canceled was during World War II. But other than that, I don't recall in my history of any of these events not being able to be held. So that certainly was a first.
And of course, Warren, we're talking about the Olympics, and we have been for a while. It's an Olympic year, of course. And your book, Warren, is Sticks and Stones, is ready to come out. And give us the quick 20 seconds on what that book's going to be all about.
Well, this book's going to be on the market in about 3 weeks' time, and it's a very interesting story. It's sort of covering curling history between 1972 and 1992, which is the span when we were attempting to get curling as a medal sport in the Olympics. And it's the whole story of the ups and downs of how that all happened and finally what took place to get curling as a sport that would receive actual medals at the Olympics. So I think it's an interesting story. It's telling how things happen behind the scenes, and I think just an enjoyable read for anyone who cares to pick it up and go through the 350 pages.
Yeah, cool. I've started to read some of it. You sent it to me virtually. So story time. Thanks a lot to Meridian Manufacturing for sponsoring that. And as we'd mentioned, we've got special guests. We've got three of them, the broadcast crew, Kev, your partners, from Sportsnet, Joan McCusker and Rob Falls and Mike Harris. Goldline curling equipment can be found in pro shops and curling stores all around the world. Plus, there are retail stores in Calgary, London, Scarborough, Mississauga, and two stores in Ottawa. Goldline can be found at every Grand Slam of Curling event and online anytime at goldlinecurling.com. We've got our three guests coming on. You guys have given your opinions and highlights of the year, and we thought it would be a good idea to get Rob Falls, Mike Harris, and Joe McCusker's opinion of what they thought and their Olympic predictions right now. Okay, like we said, special show. We're going to interview all the crew. We've got Kevin's opinion. Like we said at the top of the show, we want to get Rob Falls and we want to get Joan and Mike Harris. And we're going to start with Rob. So if you're a fan of curling, you've got to be a fan of Sportsnet. and everything that they're doing for curling with all the broadcasts that they do. And Rob Falls is going to be our first guest. Rob was just saying off air, he can't work with me. How are you, Fallsy?
I'm not alone then, huh?
Yeah, no, you're not. Yeah, it's not the first time I've heard it. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. All the best to you. Time listener, first time caller.
Yeah, long time. First, tell us, how did it all start for you? And did you ever, when you were looking ahead at your career, you've been doing it a long time, did you think at one point you're going to be right in the thick of it when it came to curling?
No, to be quite honest, no. I was always a curling fan, and that started when I was very young, living in Hamilton. My dad was a curling fan, and Hamilton TV used to carry a game of the week on Saturdays that Norm Marshall used to do play-by-play. So my dad said, come watch this. So I became a fan early. I never actually played until I was, an adult. Just didn't have the opportunity. I was a football player, played volleyball. I did a lot of other things. It wasn't until I got to Montreal, a friend of mine said, the Glenmore Curling Club is looking for curlers. Do you want to curl them? That was when I first got on the ice and realized I'd never be Kevin Martin. But again, the love for the game was there. And when Sportsnet went on the air in 98, we said, well, we picked up the World Curling Tour. Who knows curling? And they looked around and they said, Fulzy, you curled, didn't you? I said, yeah. Well, congratulations, you're now going to do the curling for the World Curling Tour. So I went, okay. I said, you realize I'm a club curler. They said, okay, don't worry about that. We'll put people who actually know the game with you. And for the first year, a couple of years, it was Ed Lukowich. And then it was Ed and Marilyn Bodo. Then as it progressed and it went to the slams, we did the slams for a bit. And then CBC jumped in and did them. And when we returned in 2012, it was a delight to get back in and call them again. So as somebody who is a club curler and a curling fan, to do curling has really been one of the bonuses in my career. I've really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the people who play it. I enjoy the people around it. It's been a great treat for me. And you know what? Don't tell anybody, but the analysts aren't bad to work with.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you got good ones. We use a call that you made in the opening of our show when you called Kevin's last rock that he threw before he retired. It's a fantastic clip. It really is good. You're super excited about it. I love it. We hear it a lot. When you look back, what are a couple of the big highlights for you?
First of all, I have not yet received a residual for any of that call. You used at the start of it.
Yeah, well, get in line. Oh, no, okay, get in line.
I take that back. Kevin buys coffee. And then always tells me I shortchanged him when I pay for coffee. So I guess I've been paid for it over and over again in Starbucks visits. So there's too many really to try to identify one. I remember a Thomas Ulsrud shot that still baffles me how he made it. That was that in the World Curling Tour or Slam? Ulsrud made a shot and we said that's a shot of the year, maybe the decade. I'd have to go back in my book and look at it. Watching some of these young curlers grow and develop and really reach the pinnacle I've really enjoyed. Just watching the success and the enjoyment and the love of the game that these curlers have, win or lose. It's difficult to lose in a major event, but when you talk to them afterwards, they just say, boy, wasn't that a game? I love what I do and I love the people I'm doing it with. So I don't know if I can identify one. Kevin's way he went out was certainly a remarkable way to do it. And I'm not just blowing smoke because I have to sit two seats away from him in the booth. But to watch somebody like that perform when he had it, I think, already locked in his mind that this was his last event. And to go out like that, that will always ring very strongly with me.
Well, now we're going to put you to the test because I'm certainly not the expert here on this show. You might thought I was, Rob, about curling, but...
So, Rob, last year was quite a remarkable year. Let's talk about it for a moment. Start with that bubble situation in Calgary. What do you think was kind of the moment of curling in 2021 from your point of view that you kind of go, wow, that was quite a happening?
Well, first of all, I have to agree with you guys. The bubble was remarkable. That they got the bubble in, first of all, and they returned curling to the ice after a very long year. I'm amazed at how it all worked out. There was fear of that somebody would get something and they'd have to stop. The fact that they got in and with very few problems, the fact that curling came back and did it in such fine fashion and didn't just do one event. They did event, then they did another event, then they did another event, and it just kept rolling. We got our slams in. The fact that they were able to do it with limited problem still has me amazed, and I'm just so delighted that people got to see curling again and the curlers got to show off what they do so well.
It was a fabulous thing to have happen to get that whole thing put together and make it happen the way it did. So let's talk about Canada for a moment. Kind of another strange year for Canada. We can go back to the 2018 Olympics when they didn't medal there at all. But the last year, it was the men's, women's, and mixed doubles. All three instances, no medals. The other teams in the world, particularly Europe, seem to be stepping forward. So is the U.S. Do you think Canada needs to have a concern? Do you think Curling Canada needs to be taking a look at the situation and saying, hey, do we need to start doing something differently?
Without question. I heard your last episode with the mailbag, and Kevin made a point about us having to try to streamline or to identify our top curlers, get them together, and have your provincial championships, but identify those curlers who down the road could represent Canada. We're losing curlers. I don't know what age it is we seem to lose them. My son was a curler all the way through public school. He curled as a high school. When he went to college, we lost them. We've got to be able to keep those young curlers who are showing talent and can be identified and keep them in the game, keep them motivated, give them reason to stay on. I think the fact that we're seeing more young people on teams having success will help young curlers continue on. But there's got to be a way, some way in the structure that we don't lose them for that chunk of time. Now, I know it's difficult because, first of all, when they're young, you can get them on the ice. But when they're teenagers, they want part-time jobs. They're getting their license. They want to have fun. They go to university. They get busy with other things. And trying to get them involved in the game or keep them involved in the game, I think, is what we really have to work on.
Yeah, it's a problem for curling. But as I look around the sports world, I'm wondering if it's not just curling that's got a problem here. When I look at the average age of a lot of the viewing audiences of the major sports, do you think it's just curling or do you think other sports have got the same concerns they need to deal with?
I think other sports have the same problem. I'm talking now to some friends who have kids in hockey and they're losing them because of the fact hockey has become so structured and they don't get a break. The great thing about curling is when do you have ice? You have ice usually from the end of September, maybe October, until April or May, and then you're out, you tell the curlers, go on, have a life, do some other things, stay in shape. If you can get some, you know, a chance to throw some rocks, throw it, but explore other things. And I find sometimes burnout is a huge factor in a lot of these young people following a sport. Because I talk to guys who have kids in hockey, and then they have power skating, and then they have skill set, and then they have another practice, and they do it all year. Then as soon as they're done at the end of their season, they're signed up for spring hockey, and then they're signed up for summer hockey camps. And I just think you've got to allow people the opportunity to recharge batteries and move along. If you don't, then it's just by the time they're 15, 16, they go, oh boy, I'm hockeyed out. I don't want to do this anymore. I'll just play with the guys in pickup games. So we want to retain them. And I think we're losing a little bit of focus is that there's fun in the game too. Make it enjoyable. Don't make it a job for them at such a young age.
Well, I think you're right, Rob, in that regard, pushing the kids. And not just the kids either, Rob. Now, you know, you're talking about the curling season starting at the club level around, you know, end of September, October, something like that. But the European Tour events start in August now, like early August. And we don't finish up our slam season until, you know, sometimes middle to end of May. So you're not allowing our players a very big summer season, and I certainly think you're right. I did want to ask you a little bit about the growth of curling and the Grand Slams. I think we do a great job on the best against the best. Doesn't matter where they're from, it's just the top teams in the world, period. And then you've got World Championships, which some countries, like say the Swiss ladies, or you know, there's certain countries, Scottish men, that are really, really strong and probably have, there should be an international event that deserves more than just one team. Canada, of course, included. A World Cup type scenario that could really entice younger athletes, a lot like other sports, Rob. What do you think of that?
Well, that's a great idea. Because, and no offense to these other countries who are just learning the game, I think you could have a top tier And then you could have the second tier and you earn that right to move in, very much like the Premier League in soccer. If you have a bad year and a bad season, you drop from the Premier League to the first division and down and down. And I think you could do that on an international basis because then it inspires those teams that are still getting better and better. You allow other people in. You're right. It opens up the game, let's see, to see the best teams at one time. And as you mentioned, the Swiss, you know, legendary for the number of great teams they've had. Canada could always field one or two. The U.S. now has a couple of women's teams that you could look at and go, well, they could be in. How about the Japanese or the Koreans? You know, you could do that. And then it focuses the attention on the best, playing the best at one time. And then you've got that next tier that says, okay, you know, it's almost like the relegation round that you're going to see in the World Juniors coming up. The World Junior Hockey Championship, those teams that do not fare well have to play off for the relegation round for that opportunity, and they have to work their way through. Nothing wrong with working your way through to get to that upper level. And I think a World Cup type format would be great. Now, there are going to be people screaming and yelling that why are there two Japanese teams? Why are there two Canadian teams in? But you earn your right to be in that World Cup event, whether it be points or play at international or field level. The structure may be difficult, and you're going to have to put up with some yelling and screaming from people saying, well, why isn't Turkey in here? Why are we not getting a team from the Czech Republic involved? That's the difficult part, but I think a World Cup would be awesome.
Well, the worry I've got is in the case of Scotland right now in Bruce Mowat, who's extremely young and unbelievably good. For Ross White, Patterson, these other male teams from Scotland who come into the slams and do well, how are they going to get any international curling that's not in the Grand Slams? Because Bruce Mowat's going to be the Olympic team. He's going to go to the Worlds. He's going to do all that stuff for a very long time. It'd be frustrating. How are you supposed to get young curlers in Scotland coming up on the male side when you've got this juggernaut going to be blocking the podium for a while?
Or didn't we have that problem in Canada too? I mean, they'd be two or three guys and you'd go, oh, here they are. How about Newfoundland and Labrador with the Gushue rink? Gushue announcing that he might want to play in his playdowns to get a shot at the Brier. I mean, everybody in Newfoundland and Labrador went, oh, come on. It makes it difficult, but doesn't it make the young team want it more?
Some. I think you're right. The real aggressive ones. But to your point earlier, it might tend to shy some people away. So a World Cup where you can have three Scottish teams, if they all, you know, are high enough ranked, or three or four Canadian teams, whatever the case may be, you know, whoever needs to draw out the numbers can draw out the numbers. But at least it gives them a chance. Right now, there's some places where the top team is so good. There's just no future. And that's, I think, a bit of a problem. But if we had the World Cup going once a month or something all over the world that can bring new teams in, wow, that's pretty cool. And I don't think it affects the World Championships or the Grand Slam property because it's totally different.
And it introduces us to a number of teams that, as you said, we may not get to see on a regular basis. So again, opens the field up, and nothing wrong with new faces. It's that's the key to this game, too, is saying, you know, I know they're good, but wow, watch these guys. And I think we saw that with Ross White this year. Here's a young team that comes in and qualifies. What do you do? Wait a minute. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to come in and learn from these guys. You're not supposed to whoop them.
So, Rob, let's put you on the spot as far as this coming year. The Olympics are just around the corner. Three questions. Olympics going to happen, and if they do, who's going to win the men's golds and who's going to win the women's?
Oh, yeah. first of all, I'm not confident if China gets a wave of this next virus, and I haven't heard much from that country on whether or not they're battling. I've heard no numbers from there, and that could just be a matter of them just keeping numbers under wrap. I believe they will have the Olympics. I truly believe they'll have the Olympics. It may be bubbled the way Tokyo was and be very tight. And they've already told family and friends that they cannot attend. So I think we're seeing an Olympic bubble as we saw for the summer games. I understand why the NHL is not doing it because that's a big money enterprise. And they already had a 3-week break built in so they can replace all those games that have been lost because of COVID. So disappointing, yes, but we're still going to see Olympic hockey. And maybe Olympic hockey is destined to be for amateurs and younger players trying to establish themselves. Now, as to curling, we're talking about this on the weekend, and we were trying to handicap what might happen. It was very close to a number of brains exploding as we tried to figure this out. On the men's side, I think Canada will be there. I believe Scotland will be there. And I'm going to say Sweden. Nickodine is maybe not had the year that he'd wanted, but when Nickodine gets into one of those games and he's been to the Olympics before, I have to think you have to look at those three. Those are my big three on the men's side. On the women's side, holy smoke, is this the strongest women's field we've ever seen at an Olympics? I mean, you just take a look, and I'm going to say Switzerland. I'm going to put Canada in the mix because Jennifer Jones is a battler, has been to the Olympics, and you don't discount Olympic experience when you get into an event like that. You know, you'd have to think of Anna Hasselborg, but I think from one of the Asian teams could surprise. And you know what? That American team has shown me a rugged determination. I don't know if I can pick a dead three. How about four? Can I have four? Of course, you guys can say, nah, Foldy, you don't know what you're talking about. But that would be my selection. And in mixed doubles, I'd say you'd have to look at the Swedes. You'd have to look at the Scots. And I'm going to throw Canada in the mix there, too.
Well, you picked six teams.
I picked three on the mixed doubles. There we go. I picked four on the men and three on the women. Didn't I know the other way around? Quit confusing me, Jim.
Okay.
I'm not supposed to do that with guests.
Okay. I got to get on to Sports Interactive. I want to make a bet. Okay. I wrote down your teams. I got a quick question for you. I've been watching curling my whole life on television, and the broadcast of curling has come so far from when I watched it, where it was like two cameras, and now you've got split screens and moving cameras and different angles. It's an unbelievable broadcast. Going forward, Rob, is there going to be newer things coming with the broadcast of curling that people can expect in terms of broadcasting curling games?
Well, what changed, of course, I think, were the mics on the skips. It allows you to hear them, and then you can disagree or agree with them. Telestrators have been great because it certainly helps in showing the viewer what's going on. Cameras have certainly got smaller and easier to work with. So, I mean, we've pretty much got it all covered. The only thing is maybe putting a camera on one of the curlers, putting a camera in one of the caps or something like that, a little GoPro, and getting their view of it from that side. But I think television has done a wonderful job in showing angles and helping convey the intensity and the emotion of the game. So I don't know how much further we can go, except for maybe having virtual lines to show guys the way they slide, or perhaps the way the rock is moving, a little bit like the Fox puck, as long as you don't overuse it. But it maybe could be used down the line in an analysis, and the analyst could use it from time to time. And maybe more FaceTime for the host.
For the broadcast crew, yeah. I never knew you were that smart. Honey, put Rob Falls on the Christmas card list. Nice guy and really smart. Okay. Rob, thanks a million, man. We really appreciate this. Love watching it, and you do a fantastic job. You get a gold star. Okay, you get a gold star.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, it's a pleasure being on the show. I was a little worried that you guys had lost my number. I know that Kevin had it, but I think he was holding it back. So have a great holiday season, guys. We'll see you in the rink, and I look forward to everybody having a safe time, and that everybody stays safe. We can all have curling again in 2022 the way it should be, with fans in the stands.
Merry Christmas, Rob. Thanks a million, man.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, thanks, yep, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks, guys. It was great. Appreciate it. See you down the road.
Our next guest was very loyal to me during all the Briars. He would make a point of coming to see me, Warren, every night in the patch at 7 o'clock every single day. But he could only stay for 3 or 4 hours, and then he had to take off. I'd love Mike Harris. We've had a million laughs over the years. And, of course, he's part of the broadcast crew. And he joins us this morning. How are you doing, Mike? What lies ahead for you? You're fantastic on the crew. I love your analysis. I watch all of it, for sure. What lies ahead for you over the next month or two?
Oh, well, I'm actually busy, which is weird. We've got I'm actually going out to Portage for the mixed doubles trials on the 27th. I'll be there for a week, and then we've got a slam scheduled right now, middle of January. Then I'm doing Manitoba Provincials end of January. And then I start 3.5 weeks of the midnight shift here in Toronto covering the Olympics. So I'm busy for the next 2 months, which I'm very grateful for, I have to say.
Do you think the Olympics will go ahead? Will they be able to pull this off? I know it's changing by the hour, so it's kind of unfair to ask a guy, but
I think they'll happen. And I did some coaching in China. They can shut things down like nobody else can, right? So I know there's going to be tons of protocols in place where you know, Kevin can attest to this, where you go to an Olympic Games and you end up trying to go see other events. And, you know, Canada Olympic House is always a great time at different events. So there's going to be none of that. And I was even asking whether or not, can Brett Gallant go watch Jennifer Jones curl? Because, you know, he and Jocelyn are a couple, so it would be nice to support each other. And there's that, even that's not going to be allowed. So it's going to be very, very isolated for the athletes. It's still, I mean, obviously a great honor for everyone to go there, but it's going to be a very different experience for everyone. So I think they'll happen because of the money and the broadcasting rights and all these things that have gone on. And they can keep it. Like, if you thought Tokyo was a tight bubble, I don't think you've seen anything yet. You know, I'm interested to see how the Olympic experience is for everyone that's going over, including media. It's a big event, but it's always fun, and you're happy to be there. So I'm interested to see how it goes for everyone.
Hey, Mike, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. From behind your eyes, having played at the Olympic Games and now commentating Olympic Games, and the excitement of doing both, because I know for me, I absolutely love it both ways. Mm-hmm. It's high energy and difficult. And your thoughts on both, like, you know, when you competed in it, but now you're still super involved in it.
Yeah, I'll tell you a great story. So in 2002, when you were there, Kevin, Joan and I it was our first Olympics for commentating with Wit. And it was one of those things, we're kind of down at ice level and you wish you were out on the ice, right? That was kind of the whole thing. Like, you still were still competing back then and you kind of wish you'd have a chance to curl. And someone from CBC, and I don't know who it was, I wish I could remember, he said to me, he goes, I can see you wish you were out there. And I said, yeah, you know, it's kind of, and I think I may have used the word disappointing or whatever it was. He goes, listen, one thing you have to remember, it's not only the Olympics for the athletes, it's the Olympics for everyone this year. So every television person, the guy who pulls cable, the guy who's, all of these people are the best at their jobs, and that's why they're here too. So that gave me a really great perspective on things. It's like, yeah, like, this isn't a big deal for everybody. It's not just the athletes who it's a big deal for. So to your point, Kevin, I just love being part of it now. And it's been it's really been a privilege, right, to be at the last number game. This will be my seventh Olympics. I can't even wrap my head around that. Really, the shine is still there, right? So I'm super excited to be doing it. And it's real, like I said, you're honored to kind of be part of a crew. And that's kind of how I look at it. And like I said, I don't take that privilege lightly. I'm really excited to bring the games to Canadians.
I was going to ask you, how are you doing the Olympics? Where are you doing it from?
We're doing it remotely from Toronto.
Okay.
So we're working the midnight shift. The draws are at 8 p.m., 1 a.m., and 7 a.m. Toronto time. Those are when the games are. So we're basically working the midnight shift. Kevin did a little bit of that. He was telling me stories of him sleeping on the floor in studio at the NBC studios his first game. So I'm interested to see what happens when we get going. You know, getting into that routine overnight is going to be something different for sure.
Will you do three in a day, Mike? Do you know that?
Apparently, yeah. I mean, wow. You know how it works at CBC, Kevin. You know how it works, yep, at CBC. We do all the games.
Let's stay in the Olympics for a moment and put you on the spot. So give us the three medalists, men, women, mixed doubles, as you see it today.
Well, I think on the men's side, it's a little easier, right, to decide. You got 1A, 1B, 1C in Adine, Mowat, and Gushue. I think that's pretty cut and dried. Whoever the fourth person into the mix in the playoffs, like, so Schuster's there, of course, defending. Next best to me, you got De Cruz and Italy. Like I said, I'm kind of high on Italy. I think they're a really, really good team. They've had a great season. They actually qualified for the Slam, Kev. They're very excited for the January Slam first. He goes, it took me 38 years to get there. I said, well, it's not easy. And he was, but they're pretty excited. You've got, I think, the top three, and then you've got Switzerland, the U.S. and Italy kind of vying for that next spot. And yeah, and after that, it's a bit of kind of up in the air, isn't it? Yeah. Women's more wide open. You know, somebody posted Jennifer Jones' schedule yesterday. Without a word of a lie, you could finish first or you can finish eighth in this field and not have done much wrong, right? You got China and Denmark, who are kind of the outliers. The other eight teams all have a chance, right? They all have a chance of winning a medal or even winning a gold medal in my mind. So who is going to win? That's a whole other situation. You know, you got Jennifer Jones, just seems to find a way to win games. So I think she'll find her way into the playoffs somehow, and then she's very good in the playoffs. So, and then beyond that, like, you know, Eve Muirhead played amazing at the Europeans. Like, she was so good, and so good again at the OQE event. She lost one game to Korea, But Eunjun Kim curled 100% against her. So that's the game she lost. And of course, everyone lost to Turkey, which was, that was a whole other weird story. But I think Eve's going to be there somehow. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I think Eve will be there. And then, so who do you pick next? Tiranzoni, two-time world champion, defending Hasselborg, defending Olympic gold medalist, Fujisawa. Let's go. I'll put Jones in the playoffs, Muirhead in the playoffs, and I will pick Tiranzoni as the other one. So those are my top three.
And what about mixed doubles?
Oh, that's, again, hard to say. I don't know the field all that well, to be honest. I should have done my homework before I came on this podcast, but Sweden will be tough. The Swiss team's pretty good, but I think eventually they'll get past, because I think most of the countries are starting to send their better players now. U.S. team look good. And how about us? How about Australia as maybe a little surprise? They finished fourth at the Worlds a couple of years ago and went undefeated to qualify, so... And they got the John Morris factor going for them, Kev. So, you know, that was it. Craig spent a lot of time with Craig Saville, so he called John the luckiest man on earth. So maybe he'll have a gold medal coaching now. So who knows, right?
So we have Scotland, Sweden, and the USA have got players that are playing in
both
the men's side as well as mixed doubles. Canada doesn't allow it. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think they should be allowed to play both?
No, I don't think in Canada it's necessary. I think in other countries it is necessary, though. I think they don't have enough depth if they want to win a medal, right? You know, that's my view on it. I think if they want to win opportunity to win a gold medal, I think they need to send their best players. And we have a lot of really good players in Canada. You could have Holman and John Morris go for Canada, or there's another, a number of other options. No, I think it's okay for other countries. I don't think we need to do that here. That's kind of my honest opinion on it.
Let's talk a little bit about curling overall. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the best teams. It's been a wild ride on because of course over the last year and a half with COVID, mm-hmm. and some teams that have really skyrocketed in the world of curling, and others that have kind of dropped off a little bit. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on the worldwide men's situation. Just because this juggernaut crew from Scotland sort of taking the world by storm, and is there anybody that can keep up to these guys?
Well, they're just been a revelation, haven't they? They've just been amazing. We talked about a lot where they changed how they all throw the rock. They all throw it the same now. They've been just a real eye opener. The level of play Gushu has brought to the table has been incredible as well. I have to say, that low scoring trials final game, but Brad Gushu never let Jacobs breathe. Like if you go back and really, they never really missed a shot the entire game. And we saw a similar thing in that last slam final, Kevin, when Gushu played Mowat. The only way to beat either one of those teams is to not miss a shot. And still, if you don't have the hammer to start the game, you still have to cross your fingers, right? And see, hope you get lucky. So,
and Bruce calls that shot in the sixth end, Mike. Remember, he calls that freeze.
Right. Well, then he's still down one, right, instead of down two. Right, he's still down one instead of down two, right? So is that going to be enough to win? But maybe that was kind of his one little glimmer of hope to get control of the game, being one down with sort of thing. But whether or not that would have won in the game or not, but the bad call lost in the game, guaranteed, right? That was the issue there. So the very top of the game, it's really, really, if the conditions allow, if the ice is playable and good and all that sort of stuff, then those two teams have just been incredibly, incredibly good. They raised the bar. Worldwide, I kind of had a bit of an eye-opener at the, it was nice to go to the OQE event because you see some countries that we're not used to seeing. And the level play is pretty good, actually. You think, watched Craig Saville coaching the Czech men. Two of the players on that team are really, really good players. They don't have the depth. Some of the developing countries just don't have the depth of players that other countries do. But the level play is pretty good around the world. I think figuring out a way to get a little bit more reps for some of these teams in arena settings would be very helpful. If you get some of those countries more reps, I think that's going to be interesting. And I was, I know if you guys have talked about this before on the previous podcast, but they've got this new, because I was talking to someone about having a World B group. You go to the Worlds, there's an A group and a B group. And rather than having really done by sections, but what they're doing now is combining the Americas and Asia into that. So we don't have the situation where we had Botcher playing Mexico and Brazil, right? And they have no chance of winning any games. But now all of those groups are going to be playing in Asia against the Qatars of the world. And so the lower level countries are going to have a chance to start to beat each other, start learning how to win games in pressure situations, where right now it feels like, certainly that the North American playdown kind of feels like just, well, sacrificial lamb to the slaughter sort of thing for for whomever comes up from Mexico and Brazil, right? So that's not going to be the case if you end up going to a bigger playdown situation where you've got A groups and B groups and that type of thing. So I'm encouraged by what's going on in the rest of the world. I think I was impressed with the level of play, and I've had lots of experience coaching in Europe too, where they have the European A and B group. There's also a C group. That's, I would kind of equate that to like an A flight club level play in Canada. Like it's not bad curling, if you know what I mean, but they can't keep up to the better teams, but they're at least getting some exposure into like pressure situations. So the more that happens, I think the better.
I knew you wouldn't have much to say about things, Mike. Hey, how about this, Mike? I read yesterday on Twitter before I went to bed last night, Darren Moulding is going to go play for New Brunswick on Grattan's team. Is that a game changer or what?
I texted Darren last night actually after I read that he sent out that tweet with the flag or something.
Yeah.
Right? So I just said I was really happy that he found a gig and I just also said you will help them a lot, and it's nothing to do with strategy in this case because James Grattan's been to a million Briars and mm-hmm. he kind of knows what he's doing, but when it comes to shot making and stuff, he's just a better player, right? I mean that's a simple way to put it. So. My apologies, James, if you're listening, but getting more good players into the mix can't hurt them. And I think with James's experience, and he calls a pretty good game, and Darren on the team now, they're going to be better. So yeah, I think, and I'm happy. I'm really happy for Darren to get to play the Briar in Lethbridge. I think it'll be awesome. So I think all of us were kind of cheering for that.
Before you go, you said you've been to a million Olympics. Did you say you were in Rio? And why?
I was in Rio. Yeah, I went and did. I did a radio show at the golf venue, so I'm a golf pro in my day job, my other job. Right. So I got hired by a friend of ours who was running the golf venue, and they had an on-site radio show where if you went to the venue and you had a set of earphones, you could tune into 92.7, and we had a golf show going during, so we would update the scores and whatnot. So myself, we had a kind of a bilingual host. Portuguese and English host, and then there was a Portuguese golf pro and myself. So I did the English, and the other guy did the Portuguese version. And then we were just basically updating the scores as off of a screen, like just like watching TV at home and calling the game. But it was for people who are on site, so it was an internal broadcast, which was great. And my favorite part of all that, Jim, was during the practice rounds for the men and the women. They didn't sell any tickets. So I had access to the ground, so I was able to go out and follow.
Oh, wow.
Well, it was Ricky Fowler, Bubba, Matt Kuchar, can't remember the fourth guy. Anyway, I was able to just like literally walk right beside them up the fairways, just chatting with them. And then when the women came, it was Lydia Ko and Inby Park, and Brooke Henderson, of course, was there. So I had chat. I mean, I love that part. That was my favorite part, just kind of be able to walk around the practice rounds
with
go to the range and watch mitt balls. So that was really cool. And unlike curling, the day was only 7 hours long. So it was great. Tee off and they're done instead of 17 hours long. And then, so I got to spend lots of time down at Canada Olympic House and went to a bunch of other events I had a great time in Rio. It was a lot of fun. And I was going to be doing the same thing in Tokyo until COVID hit too. So I'm hoping to get to Paris. The same person is running, the golf venue there as well. So. Yeah, I'm hoping to get there as well. So we'll see how that goes.
Look at you go. You're never home anymore. You're doing golf and
well, curling. It's funny. I went from like doing nothing for the last 2 years, and then like the last 6-8 weeks, I've been really busy. So I went to Lillehammer and then back here and then back over to the Netherlands and stuff. The day I got home from Lillehammer, they had this massive outbreak. The day I get home from the Netherlands, they shut the entire country down. So I'm getting out of these places just in time. So hopefully that trend continues. I go in, kind of then leave before it gets bad. So that's the move.
Well, great job, Mike. Thanks for coming on. I know you got to whip off to another meeting. You guys are really busy.
Working. It's crazy. Yeah. Merry Christmas to everyone. Yeah. And I love what you guys do. And we'll see you guys in the new year, hopefully in an arena in the not too distant future.
Take it easy, Mike. Merry Christmas.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Merry Christmas.
Thanks, gents. Cheers.
Continuing with our special show, we're interviewing all the crew from the Sportsnet broadcast. We had Rob on and Mike Harris. They got lots to say, and one of my favorite people. We go by last names now, McCusker. It's like our little curling thing, okay? That's what we do. You were just saying before we started, we had Rob Foles on, and it's the first time we've had him on, and he was all excited, as you said, to come on the big podcast, and then he got really upset that he wasn't the only guy on.
Yeah, we were just in the Manitoba Scotties, and we're driving out to Carberry for that provincials, and he goes, "Hey, guess what, Joan? I finally made it to the big show. I'm going to be on Inside Curling." And I had to say, "Oh, I'm so sorry, Rob. I hate to burst your bubble, but we're all going to be on that show."
Oh, that's great. What's up with you with Christmas? A bunch of COVID stuff happening. I'm in Alberta, Warren's in BC. We talked to Rob in Ontario, and you're in Saskatchewan. How are you going to spend Christmas? What's happening there with COVID?
We're very fortunate that we have a cabin out on a lake property in Saskatchewan. It's beautiful out here, lots of snow, and already been cross-country skiing and snowshoeing and all that fun stuff. So we've got our two daughters are coming home from Edmonton, and our son from Regina. So we'll have our immediate family. And then I'm related to most of the world out here in eastern Saskatchewan. So hoping to see that extended family in Yorkton and area, out to the farm where my mom is. And yeah, just doing a lot of rapid testing these days to go see everyone. But really looking forward to that connection.
We're doing talking a lot about the Olympics, of course, for obvious reasons. You've been there. You've participated there. You've been an Olympian. Can you kind of put into words what it's like to first of all, understand that you're kind of representing Canada and going over as an Olympian, and then the whole feeling of when you kind of step off the plane and realize you're going to be able to compete at the Olympics?
As a player, you try to think of it, you know, not in a big picture, but just grasp the idea that it's just another world, right? We always looked at it as, okay, it's just another world. It's the same people. But it really isn't, because there's the eyes of the entire world are there too. And it's just such a very big media event that everyone knows what you're doing, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what, you know, every detail about your life. It's such a microscope. And you're so exposed and that's a good thing when things are rolling really well, when you're having a wonderful event. It's a great thing that everybody shares in your joy. It's just not a good thing if you struggle. So, you know, there's always that risk for the Olympians when they go that they may not be performing as well as what they want. And they know that. So a lot of this time is getting ready to deal with that fear and how to recover when things don't go the way that they want. They are going to look forward to all the fun parts and know that pride will outweigh the fear.
Is it a life changer, Joan? Did it change your life, and will it change these Olympians' life?
Yes, becoming an Olympian changes your life. There's no question. And, you know, I didn't want to know that when we went 24 years ago. I didn't want to know that my life was going to change. But it did. It did. That exposure creates opportunity. And it's what you want to do with that opportunity. It's a choice that you'll have if you want to run with becoming a motivational speaker or doing more in terms of this kind of job, analysis of curling, becoming more of an expert in this area. Those opportunities will come to this team. And it is a matter of whether they want to take them. It's also an obligation to your community. And I've talked about this before. Once you become an Olympian, you're always an Olympian, and you will be counted on to represent your community and go to charitable events and promote your sport and promote all sport for the rest of your life, really. So that responsibility will come with an Olympian. That's how it changes your life. You are there as a spokesperson now for sport.
So since we're on the Olympics, let's stick there, put you on the spot. Will the Olympics actually happen in Beijing? And if they do, give us your picks for the medalists in men, women, and mixed doubles.
Wow, that's you guys. big ass.
Welcome to the show, Joan. Let's not horse around here, okay? All right.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I'm so shy and I never tell my opinions. So this is so hard for me to do. Not really. Okay. I'm joking. I always have an opinion. Yes, I think the Olympics will go. I do think that they have a lot of restrictions in place in terms of how many other people will go. So yes, I do feel that the Olympics are going to take place. I'm going to start with the women's side because I do believe that it's going to be such a tough Olympics. Oh my gosh. Who do I think is in the running for the Olympics? You have to look at the two-time world champion, Tirenzoni, has to be in the mix. Anna Hasselborg, the reigning gold medalist, has to be in the mix. Definitely Jennifer Jones in Canada has to be in the mix. Those are my top three, but there is, of course, so many other good teams. It's going to be a very tough battle, but I do think those three are going to rise to the top, and I don't know which order they might get on the podium. On the men's side, I think that when we take a look at, you have to put, you know, Nicholas Adin, five-time world champion, you have to put him on the podium. Bruce Mowat, you have to put him on the podium. And Brad Gushue, you have to put on the podium. So I think those three countries for sure are in the running. And again, are there other teams? Of course there are other teams that are going to throw a wrench into all of those plans. But from the outside looking in, those are the three for me. For mixed doubles, well, that's going to be interesting, right? Because that happens first. You look at those same combinations of players, you know, and the fact that we still don't even have a Canadian representative yet is really hard to kind of rank them. But I'm still putting Canada on the podium somewhere. I'm putting Scotland on the podium somewhere, and I'm putting Sweden there too. I'm putting those three as podium picks.
No, I guess mixed doubles is kind of a difficult one. I think there's a lot of players that could certainly be in the fold there. I think the USA, I think that team from Norway has been pretty predominant over the time, but that's the more difficult one.
Yep.
So I wanted to bring this up, Joan. And every time we get to the semifinals and quarterfinals in the slams, we talk about this thing called around the rings coverage that Sportsnet, Curtis Saville, actually thought of a while ago. And I get a ton of texts, emails, messages from people wondering how it's done, how confusing it is, and what it's like. So I before I forget again, I want to bring that up. And Joan, your thoughts on when we get to the rink and we're going to do around the rings coverage, your thoughts on it?
Well, first of all, I get really excited when we are doing the round of rings. I love it. Absolutely love it. What I like is that if we had to choose one game, and Kevin knows this, it's so difficult to choose just which is going to be your TV game when we have four incredible matches. We have the best teams in the world on the ice right now. And so when we get to cover four at one time, I feel like we're doing justice to all the talent that's out there. And so I get excited about that. So what we do with the round of rings is we choose games that to begin with that we think that there'll be rocks in play. So we're not going to choose a game that we think that's going to open with a couple of blanks because we know that people...
Rachel Holman with hammer.
Yeah. Oh, well, and she's not the only one. There's lots of guys that are going to be... Nicholas Adin is a good one. Like, going to be throwing a lot of peels. And we're not going to go there. We're going to go... The fans at home are going to get some entertainment, and we're going to go across the sheets to the most entertaining games. So we'll try to predict those, say, two out of the four games in the quarterfinals will start early that we think that'll be rocks in play. And by the time we do the opening and a commercial, we go to one of them. Then we delay the other two games and we just for a few minutes, just so that we're all not throwing last rock at the same time. And the only way that we keep track of all this is the three of us in the booth, Rob, Kevin, Mike, and I, but mostly Kevin, Mike, and I will choose sheets that we're the primary announcer for, analyst for, and we follow that sheet and a secondary sheet so that we can let the producer know, hey, my sheet is really great here. Like, I've got a lot of rocks in play. We should come to me next. So we bounce based upon our expertise in terms of which game is going to be interesting, plus covering equally, trying to get to other games that maybe we haven't covered quite yet. So we get to all four games at the same time. It's highly entertaining. We try not to miss anything big. We're doing justice to all the great talent out there and try to create the most entertainment for the viewership at home.
hey, Joan, it's really tough on your eyes because your one eye has to watch your primary sheet, but then your other eye has to go to all the other sheets so you don't miss
it is,
miss anything.
And it's a little bit of chaos. Often us in the booth, we're drinking coffee before these games because you have to be so alert. You know, maybe your colleague is talking about sheet C, but your primary sheet B, and your colleague wants you to weigh in on their game on sheet C to give it a, you know, what do you think? And you're going, I haven't been watching that game. I have to watch mine. And it's...
Just make it up, Joe. Just make it up. Yeah.
You have to think quickly and you have to switch gears fast. And it's just like being in the arena, Kevin, as a fan. I always watch four sheets at one time. You know, I want to sit beside somebody else that's always watching four sheets to say, hey, watch sheet D. They're about to throw Lassen and he's got to throw a draw against four. It's really exciting. So you jump around when you're in the arena. So it's trying to give the arena experience to the people at home. And sometimes you do miss a few things, but you're covering as much of the excitement as possible.
Yeah, I think the coverage is great. It's kind of interesting looking on social media at the comments at times that people make. And finally, the old guard still come back. Oh, I just want to watch that one game and I want to see all the players throw all the rocks. But certainly you can tell the response from younger people is they really appreciate the around the rings coverage. And I know I, for one, love to be able to know what's going on in all four sheets of ice. So that's a great asset for Sportsnet.
Well, it's very hard on our the people that are working in the truck. If you can possibly imagine how many times we move the overheads or we move the, you know, for our producer and director, where are we going next? And to update, you know, those little graphics on the bottom that say how many rocks are left and what the score is and who's shooting. Like, our truck is absolutely, has to be right on their game and the best people possible to make that happen. And we have to throw that credit out to the truck, the production team, to make this happen. It wouldn't look good if we didn't have the very best people working behind the scenes to make that happen.
Joan, Rob Falls had a very interesting comment when Kevin had asked him about the growth of curling. And he said, it's fantastic with, you know, all the young people coming in and we get to see them when they're in their late teens, you know, or they play in high school and some college. Then we lose a bunch of them, you know, step away from curling and come back later in their mid-20s. And he had mentioned that he think that is one of the problems with the growth of curling. There's this big gap with curlers. What are your thoughts on that?
I do think that was a problem of the past, but I know that the Curling Canada has now got some plans in place to create championships for older age groups so that you've got the old juniors, so it's, you know, the U21, but they also have a U25, and they're starting to recognize that gap is there and try to hang on to our very best curlers through that junior program so that they continue into provincials and then get that exposure, get up to that high level that they need to be to get into the Grand Slams and all the exposure to keep them going. So I do think there are plans in place now for the future that will take care of that particular situation. I've always talked about it's a lack of college and university curling and exposure, and not all parts of the country are on board with carrying a U Sports curling team. And that's horrifying to me. It really is. It's just so sad that there are places that don't have representation in U Sports in curling. And I know that we're working very hard with even the U of S here in Saskatoon, trying to get them back on board that you need a curling team representing your university when you have all of these young curlers around ready to take that next step, because that's a bridge as well. So I do think that there are plans in place, but there's a lot of work still to be done to get that exposure at that next level, and I would call it college and university level.
Question, Joan, that we put to Rob, and I think it's one that requires some thought. Looking back over the last year, Canada did not reach the medal podium in either men's mixed doubles or women's. Do you think that Curling Canada needs to have a concern about this? Is there a need to start to take a look at going in a different direction as to how we are forming and developing high-performance teams? What's your thoughts?
Well, that's a great question, Warren. It's a very difficult question to really put your finger on what's going wrong, why we aren't more dominant internationally. And the very obvious reason is that we are sending different teams all the time. And a lot of these international teams, a lot of these other countries are sending the same team all the time. And when that same team gets a chance to perform at the highest level all the time, they learn to be more consistent in that venue. And I think that, you know, it's a great problem that we have here in Canada, that we have more than one or two teams that could represent us, that could win a nationals and represent us. That's a good problem, but it's still a problem that they don't have enough international experience because we're sharing that role with so many other people. So the first time that you go to Worlds is really, really hard. So there was a lot of things that we needed to learn through that experience of last year of perhaps burning our players out before they even got to that world level. And we didn't know in that whole bubble format how that might work out. So I think there is a couple of reasons why Canada is struggling and why the rest of the world is rising to be the best. And Canada doesn't dominate as much anymore, but it certainly is exciting for all the fans. You don't know what's going to happen. And I do think we need to look at developing more teams, but that's a really hard one to solve right out of the gate.
Joan, thanks a lot for doing this. A couple of things before you go. What do you mean you are, it's minus a zillion there, and you're doing the winter decathlon. I heard you say at the top of the show, Kevin and I were probably exhausted. You're going, I'm snowshoeing, we're cross-country skiing. I'm like, oh my God, get inside by the fire.
Yeah, I'm forced to do that too, Jim. I am still the mom. I'm doing a lot of cooking, a lot of providing of food and such. But I don't sit still very well, Jim. I'm not sure if you knew that about me. But
No, I can tell. Yeah, no, I can tell. Yeah, you got a juke, you got a jive, you're a mover. And by the way, you know, you said you're almost apologetic because you said you're very opinionated. If you think you're opinionated, you should host a podcast with Kevin Martin and Warren Hansen, okay? And I'll show
I do. If you want opinion. I do work with Kevin and Mike in the booth every time, right? You know, so it is. Wow, we got a lot of things to say all the time. It's great.
Who wins out if you all have different opinions?
Oh, that is a really good one. Honestly, if I'm going to be honest, Kevin Martin would win.
No kidding, yeah.
And I don't like it one bit. I don't like it at all.
Well, feel our pain. Feel our pain over here, yeah. Joan, thanks a million for doing this. All the best. I'm glad you have a nice break there. We love the broadcast that you're doing on Sportsnet and the whole crew, and you're a big part of that, and it's fantastic. So Merry Christmas to you and your family. Stay safe.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much, guys. It's always fun to be on, and Merry Christmas to all of you. Can't wait to get back on to that next slam.
You bet, Joan. Have a great Christmas, okay?
Thanks, Joan. Merry Christmas.
Great idea, Warren. Great idea to do this, and Kevin. And but by the way, Warren, any good idea that you have, I say it's mine. That was fantastic. Of course, they had lots to say. Kevin, what do you take away from those interviews?
Boy, great interviews. Terrific to have Rob, Mike, and Joan on. Mike coaches a lot, travels a lot with European teams, Asian teams, you name it. He's all over the place. And to hear his thoughts on worldwide growth and separating teams into A, B, and even, to Mike's point, C, grouping and being able to compete against your own level and then maybe sneak into B and eventually get into A for these teams around the world. Wonderful stuff. You know, obviously with Falsey, having a great discussion about the idea of a World Cup, whatever frequency, once a month, once every 2 months, whatever the case may be, allowing teams that play in areas where you have one Gretzky that are just so good and it's very difficult for the young curlers to get world experience, to be able to have that through the World Cup. And then, of course, with Joan and just this phenomenon you know, that's come into our sport called Bruce Mowat. Those are the big things that came out, I think. Obviously, our sport's in a wonderful place where worldwide growth is so important and so strong right now. We have a great sport, and we just want to keep it growing and keep the young kids entering. Wonderful, wonderful day, and sure nice to hear from three of the big names in our sport.
Warren, I know we'd asked all three of them about who their picks are. I've been frantically writing them down, Kev, because I like the action, you know, so I can play some bets. What do you think, Warren? Who do you think is going to come out of this Olympics?
I think I more or less agree with most of what they had to say. I think in the men's side, it's probably pretty clear. I think it's Canada, Scotland, Sweden are probably the main contenders. But, man, you can't count out Schuster. A lot of experience. They've been playing pretty well this year and everything they've been in. And so he's going to be right there. Joel Ratone's from Italy. I think it was Mike mentioned, that's a good team, and they could certainly scare a lot of people, as could De Cruz. I think the Russian team, the Russian Federation, that team did very well in the bubble last year, and we sort of were surprised, I think, at their shot-calling ability and execution, and I don't think you can count them out. So, you know, I think someone said there's probably six teams there, and I think, and maybe a couple more that could be in the mix of things. I think the women's side is more of an open situation. It seemed that their consensus was kind of Canada, Switzerland, Sweden. But I think one you can't count out for sure is Eve Muirhead, Scotland. She played quite well in that qualifier in the Netherlands, and she won the European Championship undefeated. So I think she's going to be very close. And, of course, the U.S. team, Peterson. We've talked to Tabitha a couple of times. I've watched that team play the last couple of years. So has Kevin. They're pretty good, and they could certainly be right in that middle mix of things without any question. So I think those are the teams from where I sit that I think are going to be there. And mixed doubles, a little more wide open. But I think, again, if we take a look at Scotland, that's going to be Mowat. So you know that team's going to be right there. Oscar Peterson, watched him last year in mixed doubles. He plays very, very well. Don't discount the USA. Chris Plyes, very good player, and I think that they could certainly, along with Vicky Persinger, be there. And, of course, we don't know yet who's coming from Canada, but for sure we're going to have somebody that's going to be a contender. And don't forget about Norway. That team was in the final last year, and I believe they won the year before. They could be right there. And, of course, because of mixed doubles being the way it is, there's a number of other teams that are there that just could come out of nowhere and surprise. So that's kind of how I see Olympics. And, yes, I do think the Olympics will happen as well. It may be very restricted, as been suggested, but I think with China and the IOC, neither one, I believe, are going to back away from this. The only thing I could see happening because of the virus situation, if it does continue to rage, there may be some countries that may decide not to send their players because of the danger. But other than that, I think it's going to go ahead.
Okay, Kevin, you've got $1 left in your life. You've got to pick the winners at the Olympics. It's your last dollar. Men's champ, women's mixed doubles. I don't want you to pick in three here and say anyone. You must pick a winner.
A winner. The winner. Well, in men's, to go against Brad Gushue, before Brad beat Bruce Mowat in that final, I probably would have went with Mowat. But Brad Gushue is playing the best I've ever seen him play. So I've got to go with Brad in the men's side. But I will tell you that Chris Plyes, I think, is a major important part of the USA team. And he's going to get to play in the mixed doubles first. So he'll get rid of the butterflies. He's going to be a very nervous person in the mixed doubles. But by the time him and Vicky battle through, I think he's going to be really ready to play. And the other three, of course, have huge experience on the USA team. So I think they're going to give Brad a run for the money. I know that Rob and Mike and Joan, they kind of all went Gushue and Mowat in Sweden. And I'm just not so sure about that. I think I've got Schuster on the podium. I just don't know where. I kind of think Brad will probably end up winning the gold medal. On the women's side, Eunjun Kim threw 100% in one of the games in the qualifier. I just don't think people are taking that team seriously enough. I think that South Korea will be on the podium. And now, who are they bumping off the podium? Boy, that's a tough one. I'm just not sure if Anna Hasselborg can get on that podium this time. I know that's a big statement to make. But I think that South Korea will be there, and I do think that Canada will be there. Jennifer Jones, you always want her throwing the last shot, especially when it means the most. That's who you want in the entire world of curling. And the Swiss is so good, Alina Petz. So that's my pick. And as who's going to win it, I'm leaning towards South Korea to win a gold medal, actually. So that's an interesting pick, eh? And then the mixed doubles. Mixed doubles, boy, oh boy, that's a really difficult one to pick. I think that Chris and Vicky will be very nervous to start with, so they need to come out of the chute really well, and I'm just not sure if that'll happen. Sweden, Oscar Erixon, such a player, and a really good partner, Bruce Mowat, Canada. I do agree with Warren, Norway is going to be really tough. Who's going to win this one, though? I've got to lean towards Scotland with Jennifer Dodds and Bruce Mowat. Such a good team. I'm kind of leaning towards Scotland for the gold in mixed doubles.
Very good. You did well, Kevin. You actually picked three winners. Hey, is this a big breaking story, Warren? Darren Moulding, it happened last week that Darren Moulding has found a job in New Brunswick. I want to ask you both. Is this put them right in the fold?
Well, it'll certainly help them a lot. I mean, Jimmy the Kid is a really good player, and I think suggested by Mike Harris that he calls a great game. I think Jim's big problem over the time has been just not enough competition. He doesn't play at the top level enough to really be right there. But I think with Darren coming on that team, it could certainly make a huge difference. So I think they will be in the mix of things for sure.
Yeah, I think they probably, with that, with having Darren on the team, gets them to the final eight, gets them into the second round. I just don't think that the team plays enough of high-level curling to get into the final four. But I think it's an improvement, and I think they can get into the final eight and actually, you know, and compete well there. I just don't know if you can go through a sport and not compete against the best in the world on a weekly basis and then all of a sudden bring your game to that level at the right time. It's possible, but I doubt it.
When is your son's team going to pick a third, Kev? How long can they wait before they do this?
Well, there's obviously lots of talking going on behind right. the scenes. And that Carrick, he's pretty closed. You know, he's pretty tight-lipped.
Come on. He doesn't know. No inside honest. Scoop here?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. It's funny. We saw some of the Facebook stuff that on our Facebook group, and, oh, Kevin knows more than he's saying. Actually, I don't. That Carrick, he's a tough one. He doesn't tell his dad nearly enough. He might be scared, though, Jimmy, that I'm going to come on Inside Curling and tell everybody what's going on.
Yeah, blow the lid off the whole thing. Yeah,
I think just that's make stuff up. It.
Brendan Botcher has left his own team.
Oh, yeah, that Carrick, he's a smart one. But anyway, that's nothing I can do about that. He'll tell me when he's ready.
I'm sure something will happen shortly. Well, great show, fellas. That was fantastic having everybody on. And we love it. We love doing the show, and it's growing all the time. So we really appreciate you listening. Thanks a lot to all our sponsors, of course. Goldline and Sports Interaction, Coyote Tractor, Nestle Boost, and Meridian Manufacturing. Inside Curling, we're still reaching out to curling clubs wherever you are in the world, inviting you to contact us and set up a Zoom call. We've done several of them. Anyway, if you'd like to do that, get a hold of us. Also, a big thank you to Rod Paulson and his company, In-House Strategies, for all the great work he's doing on our Facebook page and in our Facebook group. Again, you want to get a hold of us? Email insidecurling@gmail.com. Warren, Kevin, did you guys get my Christmas card?
Somehow I just haven't got that yet, Jimmy.
I'll tell you why. Because I never sent you one. I hate New Year's, you guys. I don't like it. Because for 30 years of my life, every night was New Year's Eve, Warren. What about you, Kev? What are you doing for the New Year's?
Well, I'll tell you what. Anything? New Year's is always an important day for us. That's when Sean and I got married many, many years ago. It was New Year's Eve. So we had a heck of a wedding and a dance and a party on New Year's Eve back in 1988. Can you imagine? Yeah, Sean is a very patient person.
Tolerant.
Tolerant. What, yeah, she must be. What about you, Warren? What lies ahead for the New Year?
Oh, nothing too exciting, Jim.
Well, you don't have time to go to a New Year's party. Good God, man.
I'm like you. I used up all my drink tickets long ago, so it'll be quiet and just getting myself psyched for the 2022 year and more exciting editions of Inside Curling.
Yeah, good. Thanks a lot, Warren. And we look forward to your book, right? That'll be a big thing in the New Year.
Yes, that's a big thing coming in January.
Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks again. You've been listening to another episode, special episode, of Inside Curling.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Take it easy, boys.
Thanks, Jim. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.